This is VOA 1.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear reports from Katie Weaver and John Russell. Later, Mario Ritter Jr. presents this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. Finally, Katie and I take you on a journey to Arizona's Petrified Forest National Park. But first,
an ocean researcher at the University of California, San Diego, says waves have been getting bigger and stronger since 1970. There are also more big wave events than ever before. A big wave is about 4 meters tall or more. Peter Bromersky at the University's Scripps Institution of Oceanography looked at seismic records going back to 1931 in his research. Seismic information is often used to measure the power of earthquakes. But Bromersky said, large waves create enough energy to be measured by seismographs also. When large waves reach the shore, they bounce back and run into new waves. The crash sends energy through the ocean floor, where it can be measured by seismographs. Those measurements permitted Bromersky to judge the strength and size of waves over a period of 90 years. Bromersky said he stumbled upon the seismographic information. Before the discovery, he said, it was almost impossible to compare waves from the past with those from the present. It took a lot of work to put the data together. Much of the information was on paper. Bromersky and his team of student researchers had to put the information into a computer so they could examine the data. The slow process took years. They found that the height of most waves in the winter along the California coast have grown by about 30 centimeters since 1970. Starting that year, waves of over 4 meters happened more often as well. Between 1996 and 2016, the large waves happened twice as often as they did from 1949 to 1969. Bromersky and his team published their research recently in the Journal of Geophysical Research, Oceans. 1970 is the year scientists believe the warming of the planet began to speed up. Bromersky says the new data shows that climate change is making ocean waves taller and stronger. That means they are more likely to damage the coast, roads, and structures, such as piers and houses. Bromersky said his research may be a warning that bigger and stronger waves are ahead. With more warming, sea levels will rise and waves will get stronger, causing flooding and more damage to land. The California coast has already been damaged by big waves in recent years. Gary Griggs is an ocean researcher at the University of California, Santa Cruz. He did not work on the study. He said a 30-centimeter increase in wave height over 50 years is not that large. However, the findings of the study support what scientists already know. Waves are becoming stronger and causing more damage along coasts. He said Bromersky's project adds to the data showing the world is warming fast and sea levels are rising. The challenge, he said, is sort of how to really respond to that. I'm Katie Weaver.
China has released an early form of new rules that aim to reduce the amount of time children spend on their smartphones. The move affects companies such as Tencent and ByteDance, which run social media platforms and online games. The Cyberspace Administration of China, or CAC, published an early version of the rules on its website recently. The rules say that young people would not be permitted to use most internet services on mobile devices from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. The rules also say that children between the ages of 16 and 18 would only be able to use the internet for 2 hours a day. Children between the ages of 8 and 15 would be permitted only an hour a day, while those under 8 could spend only 40 minutes. Some services, such as apps or websites that are good for the physical and mental development of young people, will not be subject to the rules. The proposed restrictions are Beijing's latest efforts to attempt to limit internet addiction, a problem it views as widespread among its youth. In 2019, the Chinese government limited children's daily online game time to 90 minutes a day. Officials then tightened those restrictions in 2021. Children could only spend an hour a day playing online games on Fridays, weekends, and public holidays. Short video and online video websites like Douyin, Bilibili, and Kuaishou have offered youth modes that restrict the type of content shown to young people and the length of time they can use the service. Officials are also pushing for children to see more educational material, such as science experiments. The latest restrictions would affect Tencent, China's largest online game company, and ByteDance, which runs popular short video platform Douyin. The government pressures companies in China to enforce rules. To strengthen the online protection of minors, the CAC has in recent years pushed for the establishment of a youth mode on internet platforms, the CAC said. Since the mode was launched, there has been a positive impact in reducing youth internet and the impact of undesirable information, it added. The CAC said the rules can be commented on by the public until September 2nd. It did not say when the new rules would take effect. I'm John Russell.
next is this week's health and lifestyle report. As always, listen closely. We will have a quiz question for you to answer after you hear the story. Now, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
The U.S. National Institutes of Health, or NIH, is beginning a group of studies aimed at treatments for the condition called long COVID. Reports say millions of Americans are affected by long-lasting effects from COVID-19 infections. The NIH is using $1.15 billion provided through the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 to study how people recover from COVID-19. The project is called RECOVER. The goal is to pay for studies examining the health problems that COVID patients suffer long after their infection has ended. Dr. Ziyad Al-Ali is with Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. He is not involved in the NIH project, but his own research on American veterans has brought attention to long COVID. Speaking about the NIH's project, he said, "This is a year or two late and smaller in scope than one would hope, but nevertheless, it is a step in the right direction." Al-Ali said getting answers is important because there are so many people pushing unproven therapies. The term long COVID is used to describe about 200 symptoms. It is estimated that between 10% and 30% of people experience some form of long COVID after an infection. However, even federal health officials cannot agree on what long COVID truly means. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra has said, "If I get 10 people, I get 10 answers of what long COVID really is." The RECOVER effort has followed 24,000 patients in what are called observational studies. The goal is to define the most common symptoms. The findings will help shape future tests for treatments of the symptoms. Current tests are already taking place. They include a trial of Pfizer's antiviral drug Paxlovid. Researchers want to find out if Paxlovid can ease long COVID symptoms. The idea behind this study is that some coronaviruses remain in some patients, and the treatment will help them. Researchers are also studying treatments for brain fog and other thinking problems. Posit Science Corporation has a treatment program called Brain HQ. PASC Cognitive Recovery is from New York City's Mount Sinai Health System, and Soterix Medical has a device that stimulates brain connections. The two additional studies will begin in the coming months. One will test treatments for sleep problems in people with long COVID. Another will target breathing and heartbeat problems. People's bodies perform breathing and heartbeat unconsciously. The problems include the disorder POTS, which results from unusual blood flow to the heart. One planned trial that is the subject of some disagreement involves intolerance to exercise and tiredness or fatigue. It is not a normal experiment. It is known as a platform study. This lets the NIH add new therapies at any time. "We can rapidly pivot," said Dr. Amy Patterson, who is with the NIH. She said a failing treatment can be dropped without ending the trial. She added that the study can quickly include a treatment if something promising comes on the horizon. Dr. Anthony Komaroff said it is important to be flexible. He is a researcher from Harvard University. He is not involved in NIH's RECOVER program. But he said studying the effects of Paxlovid on long COVID patients makes all sorts of sense. But he said researchers should consider extending the treatment for longer than 25 days if there is little sign of improvement. Komaroff said he understands that people get upset over the long wait for treatment trials. He believes, however, that NIH has waited the right amount of time. Waiting, he said, permits enough time for problems to be identified. "You've got to have targets," Komaroff said. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Now, here is a question for you to try to answer. What is the NIH RECOVER project trying to do? A. Study and improve the social conditions that some experts blame for the spread of COVID-19. B. Put all research about COVID-19 and its symptoms into one database. Or C. Identify the most common signs or symptoms of long COVID to plan future studies and test treatments. The answer is C. Let's listen again to Mario discussing the RECOVER project.
The RECOVER effort has followed 24,000 patients in what are called observational studies. The goal is to define the most common symptoms. The findings will help shape future tests for treatments of the symptoms.
You can find more quiz questions about this report and others on our website, learningenglish@voanews.com. VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. National Parks journey, we travel to the southwestern state of Arizona.
There, we find a strange and colorful landscape. Yellow, red, and even purple rocks and sand cover the hilly earth. Huge pieces of ancient trees twist in unusual ways. The area is the only national park that includes a part of the historic U.S. Route 66. Welcome to the Petrified Forest National Park.
The word forest may mislead visitors. The park is in a desert, and the word petrified, which can mean afraid, may scare visitors away. But fear not. Petrified Forest gets its name from the trees that have, over millions of years, turned to stone. That natural process is called fossilization. Much of the Petrified Forest formed from tall trees called conifers. They grew over 200 million years ago near waterways. During floods, water forced the trees up from the ground. Over time, the wood from the trees became petrified.
The Petrified Forest National Park is one of the wonders of Arizona. It sits within the Painted Desert. A Spanish explorer in the 1500s gave the place its name. It is easy to see why. The desert looks like an artist's canvas. Brilliantly colored mudstones and clays cover the land as far as the eye can see. They contain bentonite, a clay that is the product of changed volcanic ash. The oldest geological formations in the park are about 227 million years old. Differently colored formations show different time periods. The Blue Mesa formations, for example, have thick bands of gray, purple, blue, and green mudstones. They are about 220 million years old.
Evidence of humans in the Petrified Forest dates back 13,000 years. People first came here after the last ice age. Early Paleo-Indian groups used the petrified wood to create different kinds of stone tools. They used them to hunt large animals. The climate warmed over several thousand years. Humans began building villages here and growing food, such as corn, squash, and beans. In the 900s, people in the area began building above-ground houses called pueblos. They also made pottery for cooking and other uses. Scientists today find evidence of early pottery and pueblo homes all over Petrified Forest National Park.
A long and severe drought in the early 1400s forced most of the people living here to move. But new groups soon arrived. European explorers came in the 1500s. By the 1800s, American pioneers began settling in the area. And by the 1920s, American motorists were traveling on U.S. Route 66. The road winds through the heart of the Painted Desert. Long before humans entered the area, though, dinosaurs dominated. Petrified Forest National Park is a world-class area for fossil research. The fossil record at the park preserves some of the earliest dinosaurs. The dinosaur fossils are from the late Triassic period, called the Dawn of the Dinosaurs. They help scientists reconstruct ancient environments.
The land here was set aside as a national monument in 1906. Congress moved to protect it because of its unique ecosystem, record of human history, and dramatic southwestern scenery. It became a national park in 1962. More than 800,000 people visit the Petrified Forest National Park each year. The best way to explore the park is by foot. The National Park Service maintains many kilometers of walking trails. The Crystal Forest Trail is a 1 kilometer path. It is named for the crystals that can be seen on the pieces of petrified wood. The trail is one of the best chances to see this fossilized wood up close.
The Petrified Forest includes many shapes and sizes of wood. From large logs to stumps, to the smallest remains of plants. Most of the petrified wood found in the park is made up of quartz. Quartz is a hard, colorless mineral. The wood sometimes shines in the sunlight as if covered by glitter.
The Painted Desert Rim Trail offers visitors a good chance to see the park's wildlife. Lizards and rabbits are common. So are snakes and foxes. Early morning or evening are the best times to see animals. These are also the times when the sun makes the Painted Desert the most colorful and spectacular. But whenever you choose to visit, the Petrified Forest and Painted Desert will awaken your senses and your curiosity about this ancient place. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.